That week between Christmas and New Year's where you just don't know what the hell to do with yourself. Right? I mean, back in the day, you just go back to work or something. But since there aren't any jobs anymore, we're in that week. Oh, God. What do I do now? This is assessment time. This is where the real programs on radio and television put together all these year-end retrospectives, you know. We just can't do it this year. It's just too crazy. It's just too insane. This hour, by the way, is sponsored by Terra Dactyl from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. That's a good site, RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. In honor of Terra's birthday today, December 27th, Terra writes, "Thank you, Mike, Kathy, and Molly, and all the truth seekers fighting in the class war resistance." Visit RepublicanDirtyTricks.com to join the RDT Facebook and Twitter pages and drop me, she writes, Pterodactyl, a note there if you have some writings you would like to share. All right, Pterodactyl, RepublicanDirtyTricks.com is this hour's sponsor. Thanks, Tara. Yeah, that week between Christmas and New Year's, we had snow here, snow all over the place. I'm going to talk about it a little bit tonight. It's another indication of global warming. Kathy was out and about today and said she was listening to whatever pig was substituting for Limbaugh, laughing and chortling and snorking and farting and wheezing about how it's so cold that it can't be global warming. How can these people be this stupid? We have a new agricultural commissioner here in Georgia. He's the Secretary of Agriculture elect. Actually, agricultural, damn it, it'll come out in a second. Pew! Agriculture commissioner elect. Forget his name. He just was elected in the last election. For the past 40 years, we have had the same Democratic agriculture commissioner in Georgia. What was his name, Kathy? His name's on all the gas pumps. What was his name? Oh, my God. We've met him a million times, you and I. But anyway, so we got a new one. I don't know the new one's name either. But he let it be known to the big news leader, the Cox Communication news leader here in Atlanta, Channel 2, WSB Television. He let it be known, the new commissioner let it be known, that when he takes office the first of the year, he will be removing paintings that have adorned the commissioner's office, the agricultural commissioner's office, for the past 30 years. 35 years. They are huge murals painted by a famous artist, also whose name is... I lost my notes about half an hour before the program, so I don't know where we're going to go today. But I don't have the artist's name either. And in one of the pictures, in a couple of the pictures, it shows the original inhabitants of Georgia before the white people came and murdered as many as they could, and the rest of them they put on the Trail of Tears and sent them to Oklahoma. But at one time, there was a huge native population here, Cherokee population and other tribes and or nations. So in honor of that, or in commemoration of that, I should say honor, in commemoration of those original Americans, one of the huge painted murals showed some happy Native Americans going about village life in, say, oh, I don't know, the mid-18th century, perhaps. And it showed their homes. They didn't live in teepees here, obviously. I think that was a Western United States or a Western Turtle Island construct. Here, they had more substantial homes. And it showed showed village life, some depictions in this mirror of village life. Well, the problem here for the new agricultural commissioner, and he's a Christian and a Republican, very devout Christian, he is going to make sure that Jesus helps the peanut crop come in and all kinds of stuff. But the thing that offended him the most is that some of the Native Americans are depicted nude from the waist up, the females. And shades of our former attorney general, right? And some of the Native American males are dressed only in loincloths. Now, whether or not they, these people wore loincloths is a mystery to me. I have no idea. But the pictures show Native American men and women in various stages of what the white people consider ungodly undress. Oh, my God! Look! Her top isn't covered! So, our new commissioner, this is on the news tonight. It just freaked me out. So, the new guy wants the art removed because, in his words, there are depictions of humans that are not in keeping with the spirit of the Department of Agriculture here in the great state of Georgia. naked people. Oh, it's going to be an interesting 4 years here in Georgia. You know, after the election, the Georgia General Assembly now is about 80% Republican, both House and Senate. And immediately after the election, about 15 Democrats say, "Oh, I'm switching parties. I'm going to become Republican." Bunch of pigs. For the first time in 63 years, when the new Congress is sworn in Washington, D.C., the first of the year, there will not be a Kennedy serving in elected office in Washington. First time in 63 years. Talk about end of an era, right? And all the right wingers going, ha 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 ha. God, it's going to be a weird year. It really is. The era ends when Patrick Kennedy of Rhode Island vacates his U.S. House seat next month. And that leaves a city council post in California as the Kennedy family's sole remaining political holding. City council post in California. President, attorney general, members of Congress, Senate, House, governorships. Whew. Who's this? Somebody call already? Scott's in Troy, Michigan. Hello, Scott. What's up?
Yeah.
Yes,
I
sir.
I got a question.
Sure.
Why is it that we haven't friggin' chickens back the streets?
Why isn't what?
With that bill that just passed with the tax reform crap.
Yeah.
It's time to just take back the capital in our own state, take back D.C., take back everybody. Like, you know, I'm getting really, really fed up with this because I've been reading more about this.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch of B.S., and I know you're passionate about this too, and I think it's time we all get our off our butts and participate in taking back this country. Because everything I bought for the holiday,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't find anything. It wasn't made in China. On top of everything, it's like you know, and everything seems to be kind of intertwined. I'm just getting tired of it. I mean, I'm getting tired of the whole rigmarole.
Well, I hear you, Scott. I think a lot of Americans are. You tell me where to meet up, I'll be there. Thanks, Scott. We'll be right back. Past the hour, a lot of broadcast outlets go down a whole list of famous people who, or notorious people who have died this past year. I got word today that Neil Rogers died on Christmas Eve, just passed. Neil Rogers was our iconic broadcaster in South Florida. He was on WIOD at the same time I was on WSB here in Atlanta, both Cox communication stations. Neil was openly gay. He was a Jewish atheist. Yeah, he used to piss everybody off. I loved him. I thought he was great. He was 68 years old. Lately, he'd been living in Toronto, I believe. He suffered two heart attacks and a stroke. And in November, he returned to South Florida, where he died about 3 o'clock in the afternoon on New Year's Eve Day. Neil Rogers, who kept a lot of people sane in the 70s and the 80s in South Florida when the rest of the world was turning into right-wing garbage. Neil Rogers was Neil Rogers predates Limbaugh and Hannity and the psychopathic Beck and all the rest of these bastards by decades. So, for those of you who know who I'm talking about, Neil Rogers died on Friday. The number here is 877-996-2556. We'll take some calls tonight. Ed is in St. Clair Shores, Michigan, which used to be a fairly well-to-do area, but I guess it's really gone down the crapper now, right, Ed?
Oh, yeah, we've had some rough times. I think that the real unemployment in Michigan, particularly in the area I live in, has gone up from about maybe 7% when the Democrats took office in 2006 to about 25% today.
Yeah, Democrats, huh? Maybe it has something to do with those corporations that closed their factories and moved them to China. What do you think?
Well, you know what I think? I think, you know, I'm a Tea Party member.
Wait. That was a fair question. You tossed a ridiculous statement at me, and I'm just handing you back a fact, and you immediately run like a little 7-year-old girl from the fact. The fact is, all those jobs you lost in St. Clair Shores were because corporate America closed the factories and moved them overseas.
No, Mike, the reason why the jobs were lost was because of something called technology.
No, it's absolutely not. No, they still make cars in China, Ed. They make cars in India, Ed. They make cars in Canada. They make cars in Poland. They make cars in Germany. They make cars in Japan. What do you mean technology?
What happened, Ed?
The American corporations, these huge capitalistic monoliths, decided that people like you, Ed, were worthless. And so they moved the corporations out of the United States to some place where they could get people for $3 a day rather than $30 an hour. That's where all the jobs went, Ed. That's where all the jobs went. Now, surely you know that.
Output has gone up.
Ed, Ed, wait a second. For God's sake, don't display this Tea Party ignorance. When you say computer technology builds that, are you saying that these millions of Chinese workers who now build American cars, or cars that are sold here, they're not human? What are you talking about?
The cars are made primarily by automation.
Okay, look, listen, Ed, I'm sorry. I can't take it. I really can't take it. Thanks, Ed. Goodbye, Ed! The Democrats. God. Oh, my God. Let me see. Never mind. All those cars that are built in China are built by computers. All those pictures we see of factories that have moved, and not just cars, but everything, motorcycles and motorbikes and ovens and washing machines and refrigerators and freezers and roller skates and all that stuff that used to be made here, and cameras and watches and computers and stuff, is all built in China by computers. No, Ed, it's built in China by workers who are paid less money than you would get up for in the morning. So, but I can understand why you're saying what you say. You're a teabagger, you proudly state, which means you have room temperature IQ. But your day is coming, pal! You got a Republican Congress and Republican this and Republican that! Hallelujah! Salvation is right around the corner! Amen, amen, amen! We'll be right back. Before the hour, this is the Molloy Program, 877-996-2556 is the number here. Come back to your calls in a moment. It's about time for a report from our economic affairs correspondent, Prairie 2, who's writing tonight about Black Friday, Black Monday, Black Crude, or Black Thursday, 1929. Jesus, his subject lines are getting as long as his essays, right? Prairie 2 writes, a lot of noise is being made about how retail sales will set a new record, or at least match the last year before the collapse. They point to empty shelves for some items as if this were proof, while not mentioning that retailers slashed inventory drastically for this season from past years to avoid doing any real discounting. Saying something is half off from a price that was doubled to begin with, well, you know how this works out, but most people never really catch on. Some electronics are down sharply, but this has to do with what is considered normal reduction in prices by manufacturers, as new product innovations mature into yesterday's old hat. There's also an oversupply of flat screens as production facilities that began construction right before the collapse are coming up to full speed. Our retailers were building consumer confidence early in the fall by announcing how many thousands of temps they were hiring for the Christmas season. The November jobs report showed retail sector jobs actually declined by 26,000. Oh, my. This fits into the current corporate practice of firing staff and replacing them with low-paid temps. This is what keeps the weekly jobless claims high, despite total employment numbers remaining fairly steady, or even gaining a few thousand jobs each month. The retail sales numbers trumpeted in the news not only reflect higher prices, but are also getting a boost from rising gasoline prices. The higher prices are being driven by speculators using the free money they're getting from the Federal Reserve. It's the increase in the money supply and not any decline in supply or increase in demand. We actually have always produced more gasoline in the U.S. than we can use, and we export billions of barrels to Africa. If the oil refineries didn't have that market, they would need to burn it. 40 to 50% of a barrel of oil is gasoline, depending on the source. Refineries could be built to convert gasoline into other products, but this type of refining isn't cheap. We are actually more dependent on the other elements in oil, like diesel and jet fuel, as well as heating oil and trace chemicals. Even the Obama stimulus for shovel-ready projects had to be scaled back because of a shortage of asphalt. Ending our dependence on oil is more complicated than plugging in a bunch of electric cars. That would just mean we would export, or really re-export, more gasoline. This would likely make oil more expensive and not cheaper. Not that we shouldn't move ahead, but it requires a much broader change. Prairie 2 sometimes does not match his verbs and nouns. So what will the new year bring? He asks. Higher profits for large retailers, most certainly. They're keeping prices up and wages down, a capitalist success story. Very soon, a lot of temps will be out of work again and probably not eligible for unemployment. The number of retail units sold wasn't up all that much, so there will be no real boost for manufacturing jobs. Not in China, where most retail goods are made, but especially not here. Expect higher prices for food and fuel, thanks to the Federal Reserve. There will also be continuing pressure to cut wages and, at best, a flat jobs market. The new talking point from the Republicans is to change federal law to allow the states to go bankrupt, as well as local governments. The purpose of this would be to void all union contracts and renege on pension plans, all in the name of austerity. I wonder where Ed the Teabagger is on that one, huh? There are about a dozen conservative Democratic senators, so this is a real possibility if enough panic can be generated over deficits. Cutting wages in half was how President Hoover solved his economic crisis. Everything would have been rosy if FDR hadn't plunged us into the Great Depression by spending too much money and by imposing his protectionist trade policies. No? Huh? Ask any Republican. Pray to. Yeah, that's the latest from these right-wing psychopaths is that the Depression was caused by FDR. Oh, Mitch, yeah. Oh, my God. I can't stand it. I really can't. Mark is in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
This jobs thing, I'm not sure if you've seen, but Dennis Kucinich on the 17th of December before the last Congress let out, introduced a bill called the NEED Act for full employment, the plan of which is to pull the currency issuing power back from the Federal Reserve and bring it back into the Department of the Treasury and create jobs with money that's issued by the federal government, not loaned into existence by the Federal Reserve, and I'm wondering if you have knowledge of this.
No, I don't. You're telling me something I hadn't heard of.
Well, there's a website called monetary.org, and the monetary.org website is really trying to teach people the difference between money and currency and where our currency comes from and what the utility of money is supposed to be within an economy. And our currency is not supposed to be borrowed into existence, and because that is the case, it leads to horrendous kind of economies such as we have now, but it has been growing, the federal debt has been growing just as a result of the fact that we borrow our money into existence.
Mm-hmm.
So Dennis Kucinich introduces this bill to fix the problems that we have with unemployment and to bring us to full employment by way of first pulling the monetary issuing power back into the federal government and away from the hands of the private bankers called the Federal Reserve. And if you could check out that bill, there's a link to it on the monetary.org website. But at the monetary.org website, there's also tons of information about the severe lack of knowledge that we as a people have as to the utility of money within our society and the insanity of the way that we do it right now. A simple
mm-hmm.
example would be that if everything that we have in our currency that's circulating in existence was borrowed into existence, but only was put into existence as the principal, but it's owed back principal plus interest, where does the interest come from? It's never even been issued. It's not in circulation. So the problem that we have is that this is a system that can never actually pay off the debt. Anything new that comes into the system as a debt. An interesting viewpoint of this to see it as a cartoon is a five-part series on YouTube called Money as Debt. And so Kucinich has this figured out that, look, we're never going to get a good economy if we continue to borrow our currency
mm-hmm.
into existence.
Well, that's an interesting, I hadn't even considered that, but you're right. As long as the Federal Reserve is putting the money out there, it is loaning the money to the big banks.
Absolutely. Everything is a debt.
Yeah, everything.
And every new spending is a debt. So Kucinich looks at this thing saying, what the heck are we doing? If we're going to get out of debt, why would we borrow more money to get out of debt?
Mm-hmm.
And so he introduces this bill. It's just been introduced, and he'll, of course, got nowhere. And the next Congress, he'll introduce it again. But the problem is that we as people don't understand that money in our system comes into existence
mm-hmm.
carrying a debt.
Mm-hmm.
But it only comes into existence, and then, of course, it's multiplied by the fractional reserve system of banking as more debt. But every time the money supply grows in that fashion, it's only actually growing in the form of the principal, not the interest. The interest is never even issued into existence, and so it can never actually come out of the existing money supply, and any new money comes in as more debt, and it's a Ponzi scheme. It can never pay itself off.
So Kucinich's idea has as much chance of passing into reality as building an ice cream franchise in hell has.
Well, but the problem is that the people of the country are absolutely uninformed about the
mm-hmm.
form that their money itself has. So it may have a snowball's chance in hell, but the problem is not that it's not a good idea, it's that the people themselves need a serious, and that's why I'd like to ask you to bring this up as much as you can to teach people about the insanity
mm-hmm.
of what we call our money supply. It's just a crazy system.
It is. All right. Monetary.org, Mark.
Check it out. It's a cool site, and there's a lot of other stuff. Money as Debt on YouTube. There's a lot of stuff like that.
All right. Thanks for the
Thank you.
Website. All right, Mark. Take care. Appreciate your call. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Check it out. Monetary.org.
harp. She plays it.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, and again, this hour is sponsored by Terra Dactyl. Tara from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com in honor of her birthday, which is today. Happy birthday, Tara. She writes, thank you, Mike, Kathy, and Molly Malloy, and all the truth seekers fighting in the class war resistance. Visit RepublicanDirtyTricks.com to join the RDT Facebook and Twitter pages. Drop me, Tara Dactyl, a note there if you have some writings you would like to share. Tara Dactyl is our first hour sponsor tonight. Thanks, Tara. Irish Dave and Prairie 2 both weigh in here on what caller Ed. Irish Dave said, Mike, a Michigan Ed tea partisan probably is worthless. Real unemployment at 7% in Michigan in 2006 when the Democrats took over? I don't think so. P.S. One of the leading car-producing nations is Brazil. Must have a lot of them computers down there. Who knew? Right. No, Ed is a typical teabag type. He has been fed hours and days and weeks of false information in order to totally collapse his mind so it can be easily manipulated by freaks and monsters like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and corporate America. Ed is the end product. The end product of what this madness is accomplishing. This is all that corporate America wants to do, is to have millions of Eds. That's it. And Prairie 2 points out the average factory worker in Germany makes 50% more than the average U.S. factory worker. And Germany is the world's largest exporter of manufactured goods. They have full employment, and they don't owe 90% of their gross domestic product. Everybody gets single-payer health care and can go to college for free. How about that, Ed? Those goddamn socialists. Right? But Ed is the end product. You know, Ed is like when you eat a great big meal of brown rice and broccoli, and it starts out as brown rice and broccoli, and the end product, well, you get the idea. Krugman, on his blog site a couple of days ago, he wrote that his various posts on government employment have brought out a variety of complaints. What he was writing about was that, you know, the right-wingers, the teabag types, want to insist that government employment is expanded under Obama, which it has not. It has gone down. Jesus Christ, these people are such lying, crazy. Oh, man. There was a temporary spike from the census. And that number is being misused, as Krugman points out. He writes a few points. First, what we've seen under Obama is a small rise in federal employment swamped by a larger fall in state and local employment, reflecting the budget woes of the states and the inadequacy of federal aid in the slump. So you see a small rise if you look only at the feds, but a decline if you look at the overall picture. You know, might I add that the teabaggers don't do that. They don't think. They don't do research. They wait with their mouths open every morning like those geese that have their livers pumped full of food so they can be harvested for pâté. And the teabaggers sit there with their mouths open like these geese waiting for Beck or whatever horror on the radio or television starts filling them with this distortion. Krugman goes on, second, most government workers are at the local level. Most of the rest are state workers. The federal government is a small piece of the total. And if you look at what they do, a lot of them are teachers. Many of the rest are firefighters, police, and other occupations we sort of like. Those are the government employees that these filthy, ignorant teabaggers are told, well, see, look at that! Third, why has government employment grown over time? Because, we have a growing population? Here's government employment as a share of the population. And then he has a chart. Government employment got bigger under those socialists Dwight Eisenhower, LBJ, and Nixon. Since then, there has been no trend relative to population. It's remained pretty much stable with population. And bear in mind, again, that the representative government employee isn't a bureaucrat trampling on your liberty. He or she is probably a school teacher. Jesus. And when you get deeper into the details, you find other stories. Thanks to one of his comments for pointing to a dissection of claims that there has been a huge increase in the number of regulators. It turns out that essentially all of this increase reflects the growth of Homeland Security. Who put Homeland Security together? 3, 2, 1. That's right. Hey, so those are the facts, not that they matter. If there's one thing that a teabagger cannot deal with, it is reality or facts. Can't be done. All right, we have a break coming here. We'll take some more calls when we come back. The number is 877-996-2556. And if you want to get rid of your holiday letdown sensation that you have right now, come on, you know you have it. Just call the program tonight. We will pump you up. Unless your name is Ed from St. Clair Shores, in which case, doesn't matter. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Jim Cook.
It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We're dealing with your post-holiday angst. That week between Christmas and New Year's where you don't know what the hell to do. What am I supposed to do right now? I don't know what to do.
Well, this is the traditional week when you steam clean the carpets.
When I steam?
Yeah.
I'm
waiting for you to do that. Actually, the Aztec calendar was divided into these perfect 20-day months, I think, and they had 5 days left over at the end of the year. And I can't remember the Nahuatl name for them. It was like the Nementoden or something. But you were afraid to do anything. You just basically hid in a cave because the days really didn't exist. And if the gods found out you were there, You know, it's like
Have you been going to the library?
Peyote, right. Anyway, no, I'll show you
have,
the same thing.
Have you been going to the library again?
No, I shouldn't read that book, but my book. But anyway, there was a very liberal.
What book was that?
Richard Jennings, Aztec.
Aztec?
Excellent novel. There's a lot of, it was a historical novel. There's a lot of fact. I got very interested in the pre-Columbian.
Five days
at the end of the calendar.
And what happened to
those?
They
were just dead days. And God's help you if a child was born during that.
Is that when they had the human sacrifice?
Oh, they had that all the time. I think they may have ramped it up. Yeah, I'm not sure about that, actually. Some pre-Columbian Indian scholar who I'm sure is listening right now will call the show and talk about that. But it was very interesting. So it's a real phenomenon going all the way back to, you know, ancient times, this feeling of this being some sort of dead zone.
I think it was this time of the year, a few centuries ago, when the Christians would get together and burn witches, right?
They ran out of peat.
Peat. There was only so many peats around, right? After Pete, they had to go for Ralph and then Susan. This hour is sponsored by Marlo Hall. She writes a special thank you to Mike and company and my special friend Kristen. Love, Marlo. Thank you, Marlo. Marlo Hall is our sponsor this hour. Back to the Krugman thing for just a second here. Regarding federal employment in 2008, 2009, 2000, you know, all these statements by the crazed teabag people that federal employment is out of control. Krugman writes, okay, I got a bit curious. Some of the commenters on this post trying to find runaway government employment growth somewhere made a big deal of the rise in federal employment during 2008. So what's that about? I only have time for a quick check right now, but if we look at this table, he shows a table, we find that between January 2008 and January 2009, overall federal employment outside the Postal Service rose by about 82,000 people. Okay, of that, 27,000 was in defense, 25,000 in Veterans Affairs, 13,000 in Homeland Security. That's about three-quarters of the increase right there. Meanwhile, there weren't any big increases in agencies like Health and Human Services. So, like the alleged expansion in regulators, this was basically about security-related employment. I'm not sure what the rise in VA, etc. employment was about, but it had nothing to do with big government. The point Krugman's trying to make here, and these are from his blog site, not his column, but the point he tries to make, Krugman very effectively and non-apocalyptically, like my good friend Chris Hedges does, Krugman rebuts the lies and the distortions that are put out there as fact, that the teabaggers believe, the Republicans believe, some Democrats believe and stay home so the teabaggers and the Republicans can all troop to the rigged polling places and vote in more of their psychotic ilk. So that this this devolving of representative government in this country can continue apace. I just may include something here the next hour. I thought most of what Chris Hedges writes, I've read just about everything the man has written. And I thought, well, you know, it can't be any more realistic in using the word again in apocalyptic sense than what he's written before. But he's got a piece out now that, oh my God. So anyway, I think I'll share that with you when at some point this evening. Linda is in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Linda.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I just wanted to let you know how much I appreciate you handling that caller that Ed that called. It gives me a lot of heart, and I just want to let you know how great your show is and how much I enjoy it every night.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you very much.
Also, the chat room at Ustream is real good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. That's a lot of interesting conversation and observations go on there. I half expect, though, every night there's going to be a water balloon fight in there.
Oh, no. I just love the people in there. They're great. I'm in there as Fango.
Oh, who are
you? Fango.
Spell it for me.
P-H-A-N-G-O.
Oh, Fango.
Yeah, I'm in there every night. Just about.
Yeah?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
And I love your show, and you give me a lot of great facts to go on.
Well,
and a way to hang in there.
Well, thanks for checking in, Linda.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Take care. Appreciate it. Yeah, if you haven't been to the Ustream chat room, I don't know what you're waiting for. The Malloy Show. And look at the conversations that go on there. And again, I have to expect that some night there's going to be, you know, a water balloon fight breakout. All in good fun. But I think it'd be great to see water balloons in the chat room. Jeff is in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Jeff.
Ahoy, Malloy. How do you do?
I'm fine, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Hey, it was great your daughter telling that story last night. I think we all had a very good time, but then our someone decided to rain in our parade afterwards, and I don't know what he was, some sort of Fox News zombie or something, but oh, my God, now I'm starting to have less hope in the younger generation.
Yeah, well, oh, that 13-year-old kid that called in?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know. It's not just the adults that can be brainwashed. As a matter of fact, the new theory with the neo-fascist right in this country is to get these little boogers when they're young and turn them into robots early.
Yeah, well, three things are going to happen with that kid. Either he's in his late teens, he'll probably realize what his parents were telling him was total crap. The second option is to wind up in Iraq somewhere. And the third option, he'll wind up in a padded room playing around with his tea bags.
Could be. But let's hope that, you know, the future rests in the hands and minds of the young people. Let's hope that doesn't happen, Jeff. I mean, but I hear you. Jeff, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Thank you. We have a break here? We do. We have a break coming up when we come. Oh, we have two open lines. Ah! Everybody complains about, well, Malloy never takes any phone calls. All right, we are taking phone calls tonight. 877-996-2556 if you'd like to join in. We'll be right back.
Coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Past the hour. All right. This hour is brought to you by Marlo Hall. Her message, a special thank you to Mike and company, my special friend Kristen. Love, Marlo. Thanks, Marlo. The New York Times editorial the other day talking about the banks and WikiLeaks. Ooh, I just can't wait. This is like anticipating a new segment on Lockup on MSNBC, one of my favorite programs, or a new Cops segment, anticipating what WikiLeaks is going to release about the banks. But the New York Times says the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks has not been convicted of a crime. Yeah. The Justice Department has not even pressed charges. Yeah. Nonetheless, the financial industry is trying to shut it down. I wonder why. The financial industry? Why? Why would they do that? All they've talked about with the WikiLeaks document dumps are Iran, Iraq, and the State Department. Why is the banking industry getting froggy and jumping all over the place? Visa, MasterCard, and PayPal announced in the past weeks they would not process any transaction attended for WikiLeaks. Earlier this month, Bank of America decided to join the group, arguing that WikiLeaks may be doing things that are, quote, inconsistent with our internal policies for processing payments, end quote. When I first read this, I thought they were going to say, arguing Bank of America said, we're not going to do that because WikiLeaks may be, I thought they were going to say committing fraud or theft or lying or cheating or stealing or corruption. And then I thought, you know, and then when I read the rest of the sentence, I thought, no, of course they wouldn't. They wouldn't out themselves like that. Inconsistent with our internal policies for processing payments. The Federal Reserve, the banking regulator, allows these companies to do this. Like other companies, banks can choose whom they do business with. Refusing to open an account for some undesirable entity is seen as reasonable risk management. The government even requires banks to keep an eye out for some shady businesses like drug dealing and money laundering. Son of a bitch! Who is most responsible for drug dealing and money laundering? The banks. The hypocrisy is just, I mean, it's beyond commenting on. It really is. Anyway, the Federal Reserve allows the banks to keep an eye out for shady businesses like drug laundering and money laundering and refuse to do business with those who engage in them. I don't think it's this big secret that every major bank in the United States is involved in handling drug money, billions upon billions of dollars of drug money. That's just like yawn, ho-hum. The Times goes on, but a bank's ability to block payments to a legal entity raises a troubling prospect. A handful of big banks could potentially bar any organization they disliked from the payment system, essentially cutting them off from the world economy. Well, bingo! New York Times! Yoo-hoo! You figured it out, did you? Hey, Ed in St. Clair Shores, hold on to your ass, baby! The fact of the matter is that banks are not like any other business. They run the payments system. That is one of the main reasons that governments protect them from failure with all sorts of guarantees. This makes them look not too unlike other public utilities. A telecommunications company, for example, may not refuse phone or broadband service to an organization it dislikes, arguing that it amounts to risky business. Not yet. Our concern, the Times writes, I always use the royal we. Our concern is not specifically about payments to WikiLeaks. This isn't the first time a bank shunned a business on similar risk management grounds. Risk management. Oh, my God. Banks in Colorado, for instance, have refused to open bank accounts for legal dispensaries of medical marijuana. Still, there are troubling questions. The decisions to bar the organization came after its founder, Julian Assange, said that next year it will release data revealing corruption in the financial industry. In 2009, Mr. Assange said that WikiLeaks had the hard drive of a Bank of America executive. What happened? What would happen if a clutch of big banks decided that a particularly irksome blogger or other organization was too risky? What if they decided, the banks, one by one, to shut down financial access to a newspaper that was about to reveal irksome truths about their operations? Like maybe your paper? This decision, the Times concludes, should not be left solely up to business as usual among the banks. Really, who should it be left up to, or to whom should it be left up? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can spend. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag in the Russian sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Marlo Hall. She sends a message. Special thank you to Mike and company and my special friend, Kristen. Love, Marlo. Thanks, Marlo. This is all over the web. Also at Daily Coast from Stonemason's Diary. Talking about, or writing about, Stonemason's writing about, and there are about 30 websites out there right now, this information, these crazy weather patterns. And one of the, there's a couple of theories, and most of the theories interlock. One of them is that the oil eruption, the geyser in the Gulf of Mexico caused by BP, did in fact break or interrupt the Gulf Loop current, the Gulf Stream. And if that's the case, then we are in a situation that is probably irreversible in terms of what is turning out to be cataclysmic weather changes, climate changes. That's one theory. Another theory, global warming that is occurring. It doesn't make any difference what these teabag morons want to believe. You know, they, most of them believe in the rapture too. The increase in temperatures has melted Arctic ice. I think we, even the dumbass teabaggers, can take a look at the pictures and see, unless they think it's photoshopped, but they can see the pictures of the open ocean where there used to be ice, you know, for the past, oh, I don't know, 10 millennia or 5 millennia or at least the last one. Yeah, whatever. But now it's open water. So what happens? First of all, the evaporation of water up into the atmosphere causes more moisture to enter into phenomena, not enter into, but be affected by or affect phenomena like the jet stream, which blows or moves this moisture into colder altitudes where it becomes snow and it falls. And the snow, when the snow falls in certain areas, it then reflects the sunlight back up into space, which means that it increases the falling temperatures, which adds into this feedback loop of you get the point. So all of this is occurring at the same time. The possibility of a broken Gulf Stream loop current, the lack of Arctic ice on the open ocean, the Arctic Ocean, which is absorbing heat. Since there is not ice to reflect it back, the Arctic Ocean absorbs the heat. I mean, what's the point, right? A couple of interviews. An Italian scientific paper shocked everyone last June. It said, here's a paragraph. The Gulf Stream importance in the global climate thermoregulation processes is well assessed. The latest real-time satellite data maps from May to June of 2010, processed by the Colorado Center for Astrodynamics Research, show for the first time a direct evidence of the rapid breaking of the Gulf Loop Current, a warm ocean current crucial part of the Gulf Stream. And then an interview with a scientist, this is another take from England on the Gulf Loop crisis. The freezing conditions that have blasted Britain are being blamed on a series of weather patterns that are bringing Arctic temperatures to much of Western Europe, California, and even Australia. One of the main factors is a change in the position of the jet stream, the fast-moving current of air that moves from west to east high in the atmosphere. Changes in the jet stream's path can cause massive changes in weather conditions across the globe. And maybe why Australians are now shivering their way through summer and the current freezing conditions in California. So how cold is it? In the sensationally titled article, Christmas Day set to be the coldest ever with temperatures plummeting to minus 10, we learn. Motorists had to contend with icy roads and air passengers were beset by more delays and cancellations. A number of train companies ran amended timetables, with some services axed on the main London to Scotland routes up the east and west coast. To add to the misery, union militants announced cynically timed strikes designed to hit the post-Christmas high street sales. They involved London underground workers demanding triple time bonuses, Northern Rail, which serves the Northeast, and Arriva trains in Wales. And as travelers endured yet another bitterly cold morning, weathermen said that should the icy weather conditions continue, the UK could be heading for its coldest December since 1890. Australians normally are getting ready to go to the beach this month, but instead, quote, Australians expecting to bask in early summer sun this Christmas are instead shivering as icy gusts sweep up from the Southern Ocean and have blanketed parts of East Coast states, New South Wales and Victoria, with up to 4 inches of snow from Beirut, Lebanon. Winds, rain and hail on Sunday battered the eastern Mediterranean for a second day, killing at least 4 people and wreaking havoc as a months-long drought came to a sudden drastic end. Drought-stricken countries across the Middle East had been praying for rain for weeks when the weather turned violent at the weekend, with at least 4 people killed as gale-force winds and torrential rain pounded the coastline. Winds topped 60 miles per hour, and waves reached 32 feet high as cities in Lebanon and Israel suffered power cuts. At least 3 people were killed in Egypt, blah, 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 blah. Germany? Blizzards and heavy snowfall struck large parts of Germany after a brief respite and caused renewed chaos on the roads, railways, and at airports as the Christmas holiday travel edged toward its climax. Hundreds of holiday travelers were stuck on the highways across northern and eastern Germany till late in the evening after freezing rains and icy roads resulted in a number of accidents and blocked several roads, blah, 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 blah. And in the United States, the driving early snowstorms and piercing cold winds blasting the Midwest, South, and East Coast, throwing commuters, air traffic, and football schedules into chaos, are the result of poorly understood atmospheric dynamics that may upset predictions of a milder winter for the eastern half of the United States. Scientists, University of Wisconsin and Madison, are among those trying to understand the mysterious interplay between Pacific and North Atlantic weather phenomena that threaten to dunk the eastern U.S. into a second year in a row of 1970s-style blizzards and cold snaps, and so on, and so on, and so on. So Kathy was out and about today, and she said when she came home, oh, my God, the creature that is substituting for the pig man was chortling and laughing and guffawing into his body fat about how the global warming acolytes and the leftist morons who actually believe Al Gore's movie was correct are choking on their own stupidity because look how cold it is! Hor, 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 hor! How can they be so stupid? I don't know. I really don't. I don't know how teabaggers, Republicans, right-wingers can be so ignorant. I guess it's because they're all terrified. They're terrified. You know, right-wingers are all cowards by nature anyway. The biggest cowards are the blowhards that manipulate all this, the Becks, the Limbaughs, the Hannitys. Although Hannity isn't really that important anymore. It's Beck and Limbaugh. But the right-wingers, the Republicans, the teabaggers, the so-called conservatives, they're terrified. They're, I don't know, it's like that line, tired of living, scared of dying. They want their sky spook to come rapture them all up into heaven, and yet they, I don't know. I like I said before, I just wish they would all go. What the hell are y'all waiting for? I mean, don't wait for the sky spook. Go, you know, go sit in a cave someplace where there's very little oxygen and just take some deep breaths and, you know, you'll rapture. You really will. You'll get there. Trust me. Trust me. Put some bags over your heads and just... God, I hate these people. All right. We got a break here? Okay, we'll take a break and come back and take your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Feels my pain. Once again, the color of my skin reminds me things ain't changed.
You okay?
Then it hit me, ain't nobody coming to get me. No one feels my pain. Once again, the color of my skin reminds me things ain't changed.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour, and the hour is brought to you by Marlo Hall. Her message, a special thanks, a special thank you to Mike and company and my special friend, Kristen. Love, Marlo. Thanks, Marlo. Buck is in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hey, Buck.
Hi, Mike. Hey, it's nice to listen to you up in Vancouver. We used to listen to you when we were living in Australia, too, because my wife and I nicked off from the U.S. in 2005. I just wanted to give you good holiday wishes.
Thank you.
Because there's a lot of places in the world where people are not feeling this angst. It seems to be really concentrated in America, and you're right about what you say. I just wish that you could be someplace else, and all your listeners could be someplace else, to just have some happy holidays. It's not bad everywhere.
Well, I love the holiday season. We had a great time. What I'm concerned about is not an American problem. although this is where I live, so obviously it's I'm more focused on the chaos that is starting to develop here and the death of our political system. But I'm more concerned about the global problem. You know, and I hear that the Australians who should be going to Bondi Beach are now huddling together in the cold because of this climate change, or the Middle East is under assault. Southern Russia is having tornadoes. I mean, this is the kind of stuff. This is not a national problem, I don't think, Buck. I think it's a global problem.
That's true, and it's going to be the drought from climate change that really kills us. There might be some weather fluctuations, but if you look at the weather patterns, drought, including in Australia, where they used to export so much wheat, they still do, but it's cutting back. Look at Russia, drought. They suspended their wheat exports. So all these global warming deniers, they forget about the dry time.
Well, they also, this is where the fear comes in. Rather than confronting an issue and dealing with it, which seems to make sense to me and to a lot of people who still have a slight ability to involve themselves in rational thought, teabaggers or right-wingers don't do that. The Republicans, conservatives, they don't do it. They run from the truth. They wait to find somebody like Beck who'll tell them that there is no such thing, or like Limbaugh who makes jokes about it. In the meantime, they're tightening the noose around their own necks. This is a part that is astonishing to me, that people are willing to commit a global disaster, speed it up, hurry it along, bring it about, to destroy the futures of their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren, just because they're so goddamn scared. They can't confront a truth and deal with it. I think most of the problems that we have on this planet, if we put the right attitude and the right mental power, they could probably be, if not solved, certainly contained until solutions are available. But teabaggers don't do that. Right-wingers don't do that. They run screaming to their AM radio dials to get Beck or Limbaugh to calm them down and tell them everything's okay, you know?
Well, this is the way I look at it. You remember the joke about the two men surprised by the bear and, oh, we can't outrun this bear? And the one guy said, that's okay, I just have to outrun you.
Outrun you,
well, the
right.
People that are aware of what's going on, they're right. Going to stand a better chance of getting through it when the truth finally does hit. And all the right-wingers, their heads are just going to explode.
Yeah, yeah. I just wish they'd go ahead and explode now so that, you know, normal people could try to find some solutions. What made you settle in Vancouver, Buck?
I loved it in Australia. It's a very blokey place. I mean, there's a lot of people down there that are like your caller, Blue. I don't know whatever happened to him, but he was
He calls periodically. But Vancouver, what about Vancouver?
My wife hated Australia because it was too blokey, and she just wasn't into the she'll be right spirit. So we wanted to come back to North America. We used to live in San Francisco, had a lot of friends there, wanted to be close to the United States. But even though we voted for Obama by postal ballot,
right,
we could see by the end of last year that he was just the third term of Bush. So we wanted to come back to North America. I'm a hospital nurse, so I can pretty much immigrate where I want to.
Mm-hmm.
And Vancouver was the closest place. We could even bop across the border to do things like see you when you talk in places like Seattle at that time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's great. Do you like Vancouver?
Yeah, Canadians are what Americans should be. They're, you know, they're,
I like that.
They're organized. They're industrious. They're not like Australians. Australians, it's all about the good times.
Yeah.
They get things done. They don't get too excited. They're not really as political as Australians or Americans. But if America was more like Canada, then, hey, it wouldn't be in the mess that it's in.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. What about cost of living? I have friends who are moving to Vancouver as soon as school is out because they have a child in elementary school. What about the cost of living there?
Well, number one, don't buy a house. This place is in an epic housing bubble. In the free newspaper, I look to see the ridiculous real estate prices.
Right.
But we're renting. We're renting in a nice area, and it gives us some flexibility. It's a higher tax society. Everything you buy, there's a 12% harmonized sales tax, a combination of national and local sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people get by. People can have nice houses and nice clothes and drive decent cars.
So the real estate bubble hasn't popped in Canada yet?
No, it hasn't popped in Australia either. We were living in Melbourne, and the prices are just crazy there, too.
Really? Huh.
Eventually, it will get to a point because... Oh, and this feeds into the other thing I want to say before I ring off. We read a lot of economics blogs. I used to pay more attention to the political news online, mm-hmm. and I don't even hardly bother with newspapers anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's in the economics blogs that you will find more of the truth, because everything political related is spin, but it's harder to lie with the numbers. And so I would advise people, forget about politics blogs, even stuff like Coast.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've found that to be true, too, Buck. I haven't gotten into the economic blogs yet, but Prairie 2, and who is our correspondent here for Things Economic, and Michael and Irish, a few people have turned, I don't know, for some reason have gotten me, at least influenced me to read. You know, I'm starting out with baby steps. I go to the business section of the New York Times, and it's pretty scary stuff, but I understand what you're saying. Buck, thanks, man. We got a break. Appreciate it. Stay in touch, pal. We shall return after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The Malloy program. Hey, check out that website, monetary.org. From the Belfast, Ireland Telegraph. The Belfast Telegraph. Apparently, Pope Benedict claimed yesterday that pedophilia wasn't considered an absolute evil as recently as the 1970s. And as a result of that statement, victims of clerical sex abuse have reacted furiously. I miss this primarily because, I really do think of the Catholic Church, the institution, as being one of the most vile, corrupt, murderous enterprises ever devised by the human mind. I'm not saying Catholics are that way, or certain individual priests or nuns or Catholic social workers. I'm talking about the institution itself, the Catholic Church. And I think anyone with just a 10th grade working knowledge of history will understand why I say that, why anyone says it. Anyway, in his traditional Christmas address last week to cardinals and officials working in Rome, this is according to the Belfast Telegraph, Pope Benedict XVI also claimed that child pornography was increasingly considered normal by society. The Pope said, quote, "In the 1970s, pedophilia was theorized as something fully in conformity with man and even with children." End quote. I don't know how to process the information about the child sex abuse that the Catholic Church has now become forever linked to, or to which the Catholic Church has now become forever linked. Again, I'm not condemning individual Catholic social workers or priests or nuns who not because of their religious training, but in spite of it, have done as much as they could to ease human suffering. But how to process or handle that avalanche of information that began, what, about 20 years ago with the revelations of child sexual abuse perpetrated by priests against little boys and little girls, seemingly without end, on every continent where the church has its fangs and claws embedded. No child anywhere on earth could be guaranteed safety if that child entered a Catholic church. I mean, that's astonishing when you think about it. It makes no difference where. Africa, South America, North America, Asia, Europe, Australia. It doesn't make any difference. And the revelations began about 20, 25 years ago, but the facts of child sexual abuse and pedophilia and rape and molestation by male Catholic priests, it goes back apparently centuries. And now the Pope says, well, in the 70s, pedophilia wasn't even considered to be an issue. I don't know how to handle statements like that, knowing as I do the power and impact that this corrupt organization has, the Catholic Church, over what, a billion? Are there a billion Catholics or something? Madness. I mean, this is just it's just madness. For someone who is the elected leader of this clutch of psychopaths, this College of Cardinals, I don't know how to describe them. And they get together when one of them dies, when the Pope dies, and they elect another one, and another one, and another one. The history of the Catholic Church during every instance of just raging tsunamis of violence against people on this planet. Those instances are well known. You can take a look at what happened during the Holocaust in Middle Europe in the 1920s and 30s and 40s. That's a good starting point, I guess. You can work forward or backward. It doesn't make any difference. Work forward or backward. The atrocities, the massive killings, torturing, beheadings, inquisitions, murder, mayhem. It's astonishing. So every time I come across an article like this one where the Pope says, well, no, pedophilia wasn't quite that bad. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he's saying. I'm not sure how, you know, to read that and move on, because it's none of my business, or to comment on it. Scary stuff. This article by Hedges. Chris Hedges just posted today. Is pretty scary. Might as well get to it because I said I was going to. He calls it 2011, the year coming, a brave new dystopia.
Now, if you're on hold, just stay there. I'll come to you in a minute. Well, more than a minute, but Chris Hedges writes, the two greatest visions of a future dystopia were George Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. The debate between those who watched our descent towards corporate totalitarianism was, who was right? Would we be, as Orwell wrote, dominated by a repressive surveillance and security state that used crude and violent forms of control? Or would we be, as Huxley envisioned, entranced by entertainment and spectacle, captivated by technology and seduced by profligate consumption to embrace our own oppression? It turns out Orwell and Huxley were both right. Huxley saw the first stage of our enslavement. Orwell saw the second. Now we have a break, so I think I will pause there. But I think the connection, the connecting novel would be Animal Farm. Or, what was the one by, Jack London, the steel. I never read it, and several people have said, oh my God, if you haven't read that, what was the one by Jack London? You know, Jack London was an absolute socialist in, you know, a good, not a totalitarian socialist, but a democratic socialist. What was the name of that? The Steel, I'll look it up during the break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Between that young boy's thighs, I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. In my battle cry down in Hollywood, I'm with the God Squad. There's no place to run. I'm paving the way to kingdom.
Boy, I'd like to believe, and I wish it were true. You know one thing, I hate to this.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Chris Hedges, A Brave New Dystopia. He is positing that Orwell and Huxley were both right about what was going to happen regarding the dystopia that we are entering into. He goes on. We have been gradually disempowered by a corporate state that, as Huxley foresaw, seduced and manipulated us through sensual gratification, cheap mass-produced goods, boundless credit, political theater, and amusement. While we were entertained, the regulations that once kept predatory corporate power in check were dismantled. The laws that once protected us were rewritten, and we were impoverished. Now that credit is drying up, good jobs for the working class are gone forever, and mass-produced goods are unaffordable. We find ourselves transported from Brave New World to 1984. The state, crippled by massive deficits, endless war, and corporate malfeasance, is sliding toward bankruptcy. It is time for Big Brother to take over from Huxley's Feelies, the Orgy Porgy, and the centrifugal Bumble Puppy. We are moving from a society where we are skillfully manipulated by lies and illusions to one where we are overtly controlled. Orwell warned of a world where books were banned. Huxley warned of a world where no one wanted to read books. Orwell warned of a state of permanent fear and war. Huxley warned of a culture diverted by mindless pleasure. Orwell warned of a state where every conversation and thought was monitored and dissent was brutally punished. Huxley warned of a state where a population, preoccupied by trivia and gossip, no longer cared about truth or information. Orwell saw us as frightened into submission. Huxley saw us seduced into submission. But Huxley, we are discovering, was merely the prelude to Orwell. Huxley understood the process by which we would be complicit in our own enslavement. Orwell understood the enslavement. Now that the corporate coup is over, we stand naked and defenseless. We are beginning to understand, as Karl Marx knew, that unfettered and unregulated capitalism is a brutal and revolutionary force that exploits human beings and the natural world until exhaustion or collapse. Orwell wrote in his novel 1984, quote, "The party seeks power entirely for its own sake. We are not interested in the good of others. We are interested solely in power. Not wealth or long life or happiness, only power, pure power. What pure power means, you will understand presently. We are different from all the oligarchies of the past in that we know what we are doing. All the others, even those who resembled ourselves, were cowards and hypocrites. The German Nazis and the Russian communists came very close to us in their methods, but they never had the courage to recognize their own motives. They pretended, perhaps they even believed, that they had seized power unwillingly and for a limited time, and that just round the corner there lay a paradise where human beings would be free and equal. We are not like that. We know that no one ever seizes power with the intention of relinquishing it. Power is not a means. It is an end. One does not establish a dictatorship in order to safeguard a revolution. One makes the revolution in order to establish the dictatorship. The object of persecution is persecution. The object of torture is torture. The object of power is power." End quote. The political philosopher, Chris Hedges writes, Sheldon Wolin, uses the term inverted totalitarianism in his book Democracy Incorporated to describe our political system, inverted totalitarianism. It's a term that would make sense to Huxley. In inverted totalitarianism, the sophisticated technologies of corporate control, intimidation, and mass manipulation, which far surpass those employed by previous totalitarian states, are effectively masked by the glitter, the noise, and abundance of a consumer society. Political participation and civil liberties are gradually surrendered. The corporation state, hidden or hiding behind the smoke screen of the public relations industry, the entertainment industry, and the tawdry materialism of a consumer society, devours us from the inside out. It owes no allegiance to us or to the nation. It feasts upon our carcass. Ooh. Ooh. All right. There's more. Chris Hedges writing 2011, colon, A Brave New Dystopia. And settles the argument, is it Orwell or is it Huxley? Is it Huxley or is it Orwell who really saw the future and decided to write about it? We'll be right back.
your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour, continuing Chris Hedges' latest piece, finding the prophet of future dystopia. Was it Orwell or Huxley? Aldous Huxley, or was it both? Anyway, Hedges goes on, the corporate state does not find its expression in a demagogue or charismatic leader. It is defined by the anonymity and facelessness of the corporation. Corporations who hire attractive spokespeople like Barack Obama control the uses of science, technology, education, and mass communication. They control the messages in movies and television. And, as in the book Brave New World, they use these tools of communication to bolster tyranny. Our system of mass communication, as Wolin writes, quote, block out, eliminate whatever might introduce qualification, ambiguity, or dialogue, anything that might weaken or complicate the holistic force of their creation, the corporate states. End quote. The result is a monochromatic system of information. Celebrity courtiers masquerading as journalists, experts, and specialists identify our problems and patiently explain the parameters. All those who argue outside the imposed parameters are dismissed as irrelevant cranks, extremists, or members of a radical left. Prescient social critics from Ralph Nader to Noam Chomsky are banished. Acceptable opinions have a range of A to B. The culture under the tutelage of these corporate courtiers becomes, as Huxley noted, a world of cheerful conformity as well as an endless and finally fatal optimism. We busy ourselves buying products that promise to change our lives, make us more beautiful, confident, or successful, as we are steadily stripped of rights, money, and influence. All messages we receive through these systems of communication, whether on the nightly news or talk shows like Oprah, they all promote a brighter, happier tomorrow. And this, as Wolin points out, is, quote, the same ideology that invites corporate executives to exaggerate profits and conceal losses, but always with a sunny face, end quote. We have been entranced, as Wolin writes, by, quote, continuous technological advances, end quote, that, quote, encourage elaborate fantasies of individual prowess, eternal youthfulness, beauty through surgery, actions measured in nanoseconds, a dream-laden culture of ever-expanding control and possibility, whose denizens are prone to fantasies because the vast majority have imagination but little scientific knowledge, end quote. Our manufacturing base, Hedges Wright, has been dismantled. Speculators and swindlers have looted the U.S. Treasury and stolen billions from small shareholders who had set aside money for retirement or college. Civil liberties, including habeas corpus and protection from warrantless wiretapping, have been taken away. Basic services, including public education and health care, have been handed over to the corporations to exploit for profit. The few who raise voices of dissent, who refuse to engage in the corporate happy talk, are derided by the corporate establishment as freaks. Attitudes and temperament have been cleverly engineered by the corporate state, as with Huxley's pliant characters in Brave New World. The book's protagonist, Bernard Marx, turns in frustration to his girlfriend, Lenina. "Don't you wish you were free, Lenina?" he asks. "I don't know what you mean. I am free. Free to have the most wonderful time. Everybody's happy nowadays." He laughed. "Yes, everybody's happy nowadays. We have been giving the children that at age 5. But wouldn't you like to be free to be happy in some other way, Lenina? In your own way, for example, not in everybody else's way?" "I don't know what you mean," she repeated. The facade, Hedges writes, is crumbling.
As more and more people realize that they have been used and robbed, we will move swiftly from Huxley's Brave New World to Orwell's 1984. The public at some point will have to face some very unpleasant truths. The good-paying jobs are not coming back. The largest deficits in human history mean that we are trapped in a debt peonage system that will be used by the corporate state to eradicate the last vestiges of social protection for citizens, including Social Security. The state has devolved from a capitalist democracy to neo-feudalism. And when these truths become apparent, anger will replace the corporate-imposed cheerful conformity, the bleakness of our post-industrial pockets, where some 40 million Americans live in a state of poverty, and tens of millions in a category called near poverty, coupled with the lack of credit to save families from foreclosure, bank repossessions, and bankruptcy from medical bills, means that inverted totalitarianism will no longer work. We increasingly live in Orwell's Oceania, not Huxley's The World State. Osama bin Laden plays the role assumed by Emmanuel Goldstein in 1984. Goldstein, in the novel, is the public face of terror. His evil machinations and clandestine acts of violence dominate the nightly news. Goldstein's image appears each day on Oceania's television screens as part of the nation's 2 minutes of hate daily ritual. And without the intervention of the state, Goldstein, like bin Laden, will kill you. All excesses are justified in the titanic fight against evil personified. The psychological torture of Private Bradley Manning, who has now been imprisoned for 7 months without being convicted of any crime, mirrors the breaking of the dissident Winston Smith at the end of 1984. Manning is being held as a maximum custody detainee in the brig at Marine Corps Base Quantico in Virginia. He spends 23 of every 24 hours alone. He's denied exercise. He cannot have a pillow or sheets for his bed. Army doctors have been plying him with antidepressants. The cruder forms of torture of the Gestapo have been replaced with refined Orwellian techniques, largely developed by government psychologists to turn dissidents like Manning into vegetables. We break souls as well as bodies. It is more effective. Now we can all be taken to Orwell's dreaded Room 101 to become compliant and harmless. These special administrative measures are regularly imposed on our dissidents, including Syed Fahad Hashmi, who was imprisoned under similar conditions for 3 years before going to trial. The techniques have psychologically maimed thousands of detainees in our black sites around the globe. They are a staple form of control in our maximum security prisons, where the corporate state makes war on our most politically astute underclass, African Americans. It all presages the shift from Huxley to Orwell. Winston Smith's torturer tells him in 1984, "Never again will you be capable of ordinary human feelings. Everything will be dead inside you. Never again will you be capable of love or friendship or joy of living or laughter or curiosity or courage or integrity. You will be hollow. We shall squeeze you empty, and then we shall fill you with ourselves." End quote. The noose is tightening. The era of amusement is being replaced by the era of repression. Tens of millions of citizens have had their emails and phone records turned over to the government. We are the most monitored and spied on citizenry in human history. Many of us have our daily routine caught on dozens of security cameras. Our proclivities and habits are recorded on the internet. Our profiles are electronically generated. Our bodies are patted down at airports and filmed by scanners and public service announcements. Car inspection stickers and public transportation posters constantly urge us to report suspicious activity. The enemy is everywhere. Well, I warned you
There's a little bit more here from Hedges' last, most recent writing that I'll share with you when we come back. See, this is a bad week. This is that week between Christmas and New Year's where, as Kathy pointed out, the Aztecs or the Mayans? Aztecs? Considered to be the time of evil? A lost time? Remember what O'Brien said. Never again will you be capable of ordinary human feeling. Everything will be dead inside you. Never again will you be capable of love or friendship or joy of living. Hell, all you have to do to get verification of that is to listen to some of these right-wingers that call. We'll be right back.
I'm saying, but I'm in tune. Right in tune.
Before the hour, almost finished. Chris Hedges, in his latest essay, 2011, A Brave New Dystopia, trying to find which of the two dystopian writers who are probably the two most popular, Huxley or Orwell, who is right. Oh, in the book I was trying to think of, The Iron Heel, Jack London. That's the other, that's the third of these dystopian novels that make a lot of sense. And Huxley and Orwell, of course, were both British, whereas London is American, was American. Finishing with what Hedges wrote, the enemy is everywhere. This is the attitude that is now prevalent in this country. You know that as well as I do. Oh, my God. You notice how it's getting worse and worse and worse everywhere. Everywhere. Hedges writes, those who did not comply with the dictates of the war on terror, a war which, as Orwell noted, is endless, are brutally silenced. The draconian security measures used to cripple protests at the G20 gatherings in Pittsburgh and Toronto were wildly disproportionate for the level of street activity. But they sent a clear message. Do not try this. The FBI's targeting of anti-war and Palestinian activists, which in late September saw agents raid homes in Minneapolis and Chicago, is a harbinger of what is to come for all who dare defy the state's official newspeak. The agents, our own thought police, seized phones, computers, documents, and other personal belongings. Subpoenas to appear before a grand jury have since been served on 26 people. The subpoenas cite federal law prohibiting, quote, providing material support or resources to designated foreign terrorist organizations, end quote. Terror, even for those who have nothing to do with terror, becomes the blunt instrument used by Big Brother to protect us from ourselves. Orwell wrote, do you see then, do you begin to see what kind of world we are creating? It is the exact opposite of the stupid hedonistic utopias that the old reformers imagined. a world of fear and treachery and torment, a world of trampling and being trampled upon, a world which will grow not less, but more merciless as it refines itself. Well then. Oh, mama! No, I don't laugh out of anything other than stark raving of terror myself. I mean, in a way, in a very very simple yet profound way, I understand why people like Haley Barbour says what he says, or people like Sarah Palin, or the teabaggers all cluster around each other as though some kind of a beast is lurking just outside the campfire circle of light. And the truth is something, a beast is lurking. It certainly is. They just think they know what it is and it isn't. They think it's a galumpher, and it's not a galumpher. It's a feeder. So, this craziness that comes from the political right, you know, to me becomes understandable. If I weren't so blinded by the dumb assery of these right wingers, I could almost feel compassion for them and say, look, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. And then I realize, oh my God, somebody else said that, and the someone who said that is to the teabaggers just another in this pantheon of demons that's been constructed for them by the useful idiots that control media in this country. You know, the personalities, the talent. So I'm just almost restricted from saying to these people, listen, you're being conned. You really don't have to feel this way. If we join forces, you know, if we present a united front, if we say, you know, no more BS, if we say, the Citizens United ruling has got to be undone legislatively if necessary. If we say we are not going to continue to watch the industrial base of this country disappear and not be replaced by a post-industrial base, a so-called green economy that seems to be going everywhere, the manufacture of which seems to be going everywhere but staying here. You know, like poor old Ed from St. Clair Shores a couple of hours ago tonight, who wants to tell me that all of the problems began in 2006 when the Democrats got control of the House and the Senate again. I almost want to feel compassion for poor old Ed and say, whoa, wait. But I can't. And I guess that is the self-defeating shame that, or the box that I find myself in. How about you? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy.